welcome back. Richie Havens is with us. Bill Russell was going to ask something when I so rudely interrupted.
Well, I think the academic description of that is what you're talking about sounds like what is characterized as the postmodern. And one representation of that is that one of the differences is not in what you believe, but how you believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that part with what you're talking
because
about?
Because how you believe it is part of how you received it. You know, so who's giving becomes important.
So it's not the reality in front of me, it's how that reality got there.
Yeah, that's right.
And the reality that we shape ourselves, which it seems to me as a songwriter.
Or the reality we suggest is there.
Yeah.
Because it's all suggestion, as far as I'm concerned.
And as a writer, you know. Not just as a performer, but as a writer, you really have a command of that. You shape the universe for us.
In my senses, I'm writing things that I believe. I think it has a lot to do with how I got to the village. You know, when I went to the Greenwich Village, they were calling me and my buddy beatniks in Brooklyn. We didn't know what a beatnik was. So we went and we were trying to find out what the hell is a beatnik. And so my buddy comes running over my house Sunday morning. He's got the Sunday news. There's a big story about the beatniks in Greenwich Village in Manhattan. I'd been to Manhattan one time in my life from 4 miles away in Brooklyn when I was 16 years old. I'm now 19 and he's telling me this. Beatniks live in Manhattan.
Well, we better live in Manhattan.
We're going to go and find out what they are. We go to Greenwich Village. Well, we find out they're poets. They're people who are saying things I never heard anybody say before. They're people who are like complete college professors for me. Greenwich Village was my university, period. That's really what it was. And what allowed it to be that was that I actually found in Greenwich Village what I thought I lost in Brooklyn, which was a community of everybody.
And
I watched Brooklyn change in the 50s from everyone to Afro-American and Spanish because of the economic problems of the country itself. I'm a kid, I don't know that. But I know that some of these people are coming here because they don't want to be where they were.
Mm-hmm.
And the Spanish, I don't know why they're coming here. You know, maybe it's, you know, they like it here. You know, this is what kids look out and see. This is a growing situation. However, you know, I basically realized, you know, how innocent we really were, you know, in terms of knowing near past history. We were totally left out. We were totally not given our history as we lived it. We were loving history as they told us.
Or they were lying to you.
Well, we found that out in the process, too. And I think that's
was part of the 60s.
That's part of the 60s, is finding out that what we were told was completely false. Completely false. I could never really be president. You know, they said I could in school, but you know what? When you look around, you need about $2 billion to become a president in this country.
And you need to be white and you need to be male.
Yeah, whatever those things were, they lied. They lied. We couldn't be president. They lied.
This goes to something about the revolution we were talking about, because it seems like a lot of that in the late 50s, 60s was in reaction to bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of success.
Mm-hmm.
The next step would seem to be, and again, I think you and your colleagues are part of that, is to go beyond what is essentially reaction,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
to become creative,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To become generative, and as you say, I think in a global sense,
mm-hmm.
in a context, you know, in the real world as we now inhabit it, not as it used to be. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. It does. I think that the becoming of America is actually the becoming of the world, in essence, because, believe it or not, America had the opportunity and has the opportunity as the world, in terms of the cultures that live here, to make a difference for everyone else in the world. You know, people who come here from another country and do well give something back to those people, even if they never go back. They gave them something. There is somewhere else. And there is somewhere else where you can be what you want to be.
Well, hope.
Yes.
I mean, there are places where people are essentially hopeless.
Exactly. Even with hope, you have to do the work. You know, that's the key, is that you have to do the work, you know, to free yourself, to be yourself, you know. And it's not as difficult as it may seem. However, I think we're so emotionally caught up in the becoming that's the forest now that we're waiting to see the trees of, you know, to see some light in. You know, that we are about to make an even larger contribution just being who we are. And it's going to be to the world. It's not going to be to here. The contribution is going to be to the whole planet. And I think that's what America is poised at this point to do.
You don't think we'll blow it?
We can't. You know why? We can't blow it. Just think about a month ago. Now, two months ago, I was on stage saying, now, wait a minute, folks. I don't think the numbers work here. There are a billion Chinese. And how many of us? And this guy is threatening them? Who do we think we really are? You know, like, wait a minute.
Well, and
the numbers
addition,
don't work. We can't win this. What stupidity is that?
In addition,
so now you come today and you look at it and it's like, it never happened.
Yeah.
It's like it never happened.
You're real interested in environmental issues, and that becomes a world issue immediately on any front.
It is a world issue, and I think that, interestingly enough, the rest of the world is way ahead of us on taking care of it, you know, like 30 years maybe, you know, of hard work on their part to save themselves. You know, now we're the biggest contributors, if not the biggest contributor to pollution, then we got to save ourselves now. And that's what we're about to do as well. Now, how do we get to do it? We need somebody to come and say, we're going to go drilling for oil in Alaska. No, you're not. And you look on them, no, they're not. So, yes, we count now. Because if 20 people speak up today, it gets heard. And the guys in Washington go under the table a little bit because they don't know how many people are attached to them, 20, and they will change it. Okay, so.
But that's a real argument for the voice that you've been for 40 years. That if you're going to sit quietly, bad things will happen.
That's right. Well, I think we know this now. I think we as a generation know this, that you have to at least say something. I think the kids today know it, but I think they pick their time to say something. And when you look at it, what is it? It's a global response to something global. Whether it's big corporations or the environment, you know, it's all part of our character today to save the planet.
Would you have known
that? Because those people live on a planet. Mm. That's why they're involved.
Could you have guessed that 40 years
ago?
No,
I will tell you, if you'd have told me in 1959 that 1960 would be the way it was, I would have told you not in my lifetime. That's how bad it was. I would have told you, not in my lifetime. I can't even see any light in that story at all.
It's easy to take your optimism as an articulation of the inevitable victory of good over evil. And I don't, looking at your life, I don't think you're saying that. I think that the battle has to be fought. And if you step back and assume it's inevitable.
Oh, no. That's not what I meant. It's inevitable. It is inevitable, believe it or not. It is.
Only inevitable. If you work like hell, though.
Well, not even. You know, I mean, well, some people have to work like hell, and they're driven to, because that's their connection to the whole of it. See, I'm connected to the whole planet. And the reason I am is because I was one of those kids that, when I grew up, I lived on the whole planet. That's where I lived. And it has a lot to do with the fact that we have not recognized the fact that we got the chance to live in a brand new world. An absolutely brand new world post-World War II. Absolutely brand new. All of the opportunity for Americans to create suburbia came from that, you know, to get out
of
town.
Good news, bad news.
To get out of town. Well, you know, they weren't told that urban sprawl would finally get us, but, you know, they were allowed to do it, you see. So I'm seeing that within those things we get to do, we learn the lessons of how to do it right.
I'm thinking that was a Pete Seeger that addressed the subject of ticky-tacky houses.
Yeah, that was straight up
that long ago.
That long ago. You know, that's the ongoing.
Yes.
I think of what you do. I am not that poetry is very hard for me, but I think of what you and Janice and you know, lots of people like you in very different art forms, mm-hmm. As poetry, as articulating to the middle brain, to the
the emotions,
to the emotions. You know, we tend to get so wrapped up in this side that we forget
this side, this being the neocortex he's pointing to. We'll do this when we come right back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. Richie Havens is with us. That was Bill Russell, and we'll all be back in just a second.